Hi everyone, it's Shelby with Hooks, Books, and Crime, and it's Crafted Story Time, where I crochet and tell you a horrible story. If you like to craft and listen to true crime, or you just like true crime, let me be your girl. If you like what you see and hear, please give us a like, a follow, a subscribe, a comment. Help me grow. But let's get started. Amberlyn Copland was born in Port Orchard, Washington, an ideal, picturesque town with mountains and lakes and a small town feel. It sought out often for nature ventures and hiking. She was born May 30th, 1984, and was one of eight children. She was a happy child, but as she got older, she began to become willful and rebellious. When Amber was 16, she became pregnant, and with this pregnancy, she decided she needed to turn her life around, and she did. She became a devoted mother and worked hard to take care of her family. Later on, she gets married, has more kids, becoming a mother to five boys with her husband, Paul Copland. She was a very involved mother. But her marriage to Paul over the years begins to break down, and this leads to a separation. Both parents were concerned with how the separation was going to affect their children, because regardless of how it's handled, there will be an effect, so they do their best to mitigate it. Even putting their kids in Cub Scouts so they can still do something together, and Amber becomes a den leader, which I think is such a great idea. Your boys learn survival skills, you still get to bond together, and you get to watch them grow into productive men. I think they hit the nail on the head with that. Brilliant idea. In 2014, Amber is living with her oldest son, who is 13, and she's working in insurance. She's also going to school to further her career in insurance. And she began seeing a man named David Kallick, and they began living together pretty quickly. But what Amber doesn't know is David is not a good man. And he was hiding a lot of red flags. You see, in March of 2014, David had been arrested for punching his girlfriend in the face and threatening to kill her. He didn't do any time for this offense, but was given probation, meaning he was on probation at the time he met and began living with Amber. I couldn't find anything that confirmed whether or not Amber was aware of his probationary status. And if she did, I don't know if she knew why he was on probation. In 2026, we live in this era of women Googling and snooping and being little detectives and finding out about the men they're seeing or the men their friends are seeing. That was less common in 2014. We were aware of the violence against women, but I don't think it was preached as much that we could help ourselves in that way. We forget public record exists. And sometimes we're so distracted by how good it is with this man, or with this person, I should say. It goes both ways. We don't think to do that kind of research. David had had run-ins with the law since his teenage years, starting with traffic violations and intoxication charges. It then grew to more violent charges. This man accrued 50 charges in 18 years. With that, I find it very hard to believe that Amber knew what he was. And even if she did know, I highly doubt he told her all of that. He probably cushioned it down to maybe two offenses 15 years ago. And if you are a woman dating men like this, probably not the best choice. I know people change. But 50 charges in 18 years with a recent offense is a big no. This goes for men too. If you're dating some woman that has a record like this, it's probably best to run and hide your wallet. But who am I? I'm just someone. Just saying though, something to think about. Now, I have no doubt that if someone would have Googled his name, they would have found multiple things on this man. But again, as mentioned before, that's not everyone's practice, and it's definitely not Amber's fault. People are really good at lying, especially criminals. And seasoned criminals are pros. Lying is second nature. And I'm sure David was well practiced in hiding information and redirecting attention to get away with things. On November 4th, 2014, Amber's son woke up for school. And as he was leaving, he noticed that David's stuff was gone. But he went on with his day and went to school. Throughout his day, though, he had this growing feeling of uneasiness, and it started to make him feel ill. And when he tried to contact his mom, she wouldn't answer. This made him feel a little bit worse. So he called his dad to pick him up from school. He gets picked up by his father, Paul, and is dropped off at home where him and his mother live. As he enters, he notices that her bedroom door is still closed, which is unlike her. But since he's not feeling well, he decides to take a shower and take a nap. While Amber's son is feeling unwell at school and going through his day, on a website called 4chan, a commotion is starting. If you are not familiar with 4chan, 4chan is a bulletin board, but it has practically no restrictions and people can post anonymously. I went to 4chan once because my ex-boyfriend told me about it and I was curious. Never fucking again. It was horrible. It is definitely a beloved site to the basement dweller. On November 4th, 2014, an anonymous post goes up and it's a picture of a dead woman. More pictures go up with ominous captions, such as, "She fought so hard," and "Turns out it's not as easy to strangle someone as it looks in the movies." The 4chan community was very skeptical of these posts. They see weird shit on there. But to most of the users, they were convinced that these pictures are fake. They had to be. No one wants to believe that they are witnessing something this real unfold. So they start questioning the posts and asking where this even happened. The responses are for the skeptics to check the Port Orchard news in a few hours, that her son should be home after a few hours, which is probably the most repulsive thing about this person, knowing that someone's adolescent child will be who finds the victim, making them a victim themselves. When Amber's son wakes up, he sees that his mom still hasn't come out of her room. Knowing this is even more uncharacteristic and wrong, he goes to check on her. At first he knocks, and as he knocks, he notices a peculiar smell coming from her room. And she doesn't answer, so he enters. He finds his mother dead in her room. She has been beaten and strangled. He gathers himself as much as he can to call his father and the police. When officers ask him about the night before, he tells them that his mother and David had fought the night before, but he had gone to bed and he didn't hear anything else. Upon inspection, they see that sometime during or after the argument, David beat Amber and then strangled her to death. She fought him, but he overpowered her and took her life. In her room, they find the license plate to her car sitting on the bed. They learn her car is missing. They also find a picture in her room that says, "She killed me first." And there are also insults written all over her body. Officers also found proof that Amber had very recently had an abortion, making this a possible motive. Writing on her body was clearly to embarrass her and shame her. And there is no question as to who did this to her. It was David Kalik. They know he is driving Amber's car, so they have this information to go off of. The hunt begins. David had apparently texted his boss that morning telling him he had done something bad and he'd probably see him on the news. Following cameras and tips and sightings, they learned that he had stopped at a pawn shop for some cash, Albertsons for some liquor, and Walmart to buy a BB gun that was a replica of a real firearm. The BB gun looking like a real gun was a must for David. He had also posted on 4chan that he intended to pull a BB gun onto officers so they would shoot and kill him. And by the end of that day, he makes it to Portland and hides out for the night. The next day, November 5th, David crosses paths with officers, but he's able to lose them and he's able to hide out for another night. But the next day, November 6th, something unexpected happens. David comes out of the woods and turns himself in. I'm thinking the reason he turned himself in is because he had no survival instincts. It's November in Oregon. I'm assuming it's getting cold. And considering all he bought was a gun and fucking liquor, this man was ill-prepared. His lack of survival instincts means he does not know how to find his resources. So it's better to turn yourself in than die out there. They check where he had been hiding out in the woods, and they find the BB gun he had purchased, as well as a confession letter. In that confession, he admits to the murder and says it was because he was drunk and she pissed him off. "Well, she pissed me off. Then leave, bitch." That's the dumbest thing I've ever heard. "Because she pissed me off." What an asshole. David is charged with first-degree murder. His arrest causes his 4chan post to circulate all over the internet, dubbing this crime the 4chan murder. And sadly, it makes its way to Amber's husband and her boys, leading to an attempt to scrub the images from the internet. But we know that there are some really deep corners in the internet, and they can't reach them all. The damage was already done to her sons. That image will forever be with them. And that's on David Kalik. David's defense tried to use his alcoholism as a means to say he was at diminished capacity. But considering his record and how he was already on probation from a violent act that happened that same year, it wasn't accepted. So David was found guilty of murder and sentenced to 82 years in prison, with the parole eligibility in the year 2100. Thankfully, he'll be dead by then. Amber's family had to learn how to go on after her loss and how to find joy in life again. One of her sons, Jason Copeland, and I'm going to try really hard not to crack here. Jason Copeland, who was 9 at the time of her death, wrote a book 2 years later called I Miss My Mom, about how he kept questioning what he could have done to help her, and to urge children witnessing their parents going through domestic violence to say something to someone. It's always an even greater tragedy when you remember the loved ones of the victim are sentenced to a life sentence themselves when this happened. That is the story of Amberlynn Coplin. I thank you for joining me today. Please don't forget to like, subscribe, follow. You can find me on TikTok, sometimes on Facebook, not necessarily on Instagram. I'm trying to be better. But I'll catch you on the next one. Okay, bye.